I don't mind a parasite. I object to a cut-rate one.
Yeah, let's cut to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
You're drowning and I throw you a life jacket. Would you grab it? Yes, good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they going to say? No? I don't want to see those returns.
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show him a 3% return, and I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know that.
That's it. I'm done.
Hello and welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howell, Greg Pappas in the studio, Matt Byrne on the board. SP Futures up 10, NASDAQ Futures up 16. We keep trickling along here. We're going to have the big rate cut saved. Never mind the fact that we're up how many points since we started cutting the rates down. But it doesn't matter. Going the other way is going to make it even better, Greg. What do you think?
We got NVIDIA earnings and Dell earnings this week, I think.
Whatever BS they come up with, NVIDIA will be up. It seems to be what they've been doing, right?
Well, last year it was, what, 25 cents a share? And this year it's expected to be 57, so.
And the stock is tripled.
Don't let the numbers get in the way of the narrative.
No, you don't want to do that. Actually, let me see before I say that. Why don't I figure out where exactly NVIDIA's stock was last year? Might be nice if we actually had some facts. We got to be something different than the rest of the shows. That would be when? November, what are we talking about? Where are we? Let's say, we would be 8:30, 2023. Where do you suppose NVIDIA was?
It's 26 cents a share, I think, were the earnings
last year. Where do you think NVIDIA was last year?
I don't know. What's it now? 130?
130, it was.
130, it was probably like 40 or 50.
Ding, 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 46.84.
Yeah.
Not bad.
It doesn't matter what the numbers are as long as the trajectory is right. So if we're more than, if we're going up still in the earnings, we're probably still going up in the stock.
Well, you know what? It's changed. This is a non-scientific survey, but it's changed dramatically in one man's opinion in the last, let's say, three decades. When stuff sort of, well, I won't say leak, when people added it, a premonition, like earnings being really good or something like that, when the stock ran from 40 to 50 and the earnings in fact were really good, the news sort of had been out.
And sell the news.
And when it was buy the rumor, sell the news. Now it runs from 40 to 50 and pretty good news, and the numbers maybe don't even justify 50, but they're good.
It's not about justify. It's about where's the next one going to be. If the rate of increase continues, then they're going to price today like that increase is happening still.
Well, yeah. Hey,
Human Nature 101.
I listened to I didn't want to talk about it with my bro because he thinks these guys are straight. I listened to Jerome Powell on Friday. All I kept thinking about was I'm paying this guy.
No, you're not.
Who is?
They're printing their own.
Well, there you go. They're using my machine.
Well,
and I'm not getting any. Neither are you.
It's we're getting inflation. It's the tax that nobody really cares about.
As they used to say,
until they're forced to.
As they used to say back at the University of Chicago, inflation could be the cruelest tax.
Yeah, tax increase.
Not only that, if you have any kind of a
lucky the dollar is strong here.
It isn't.
Well, it's pretty strong. If you look at where
it's down 5% in the last 10 weeks.
I'm talking about in general.
Yeah.
Everyone loves the dollar.
Well, but now when you say the dollar, be specific here. The dollar in regards to what?
DXY. In regards to everything.
Dollars in regard to other currencies.
Right.
But a guy who looks just like you and sounds like you. What did you send me over the weekend?
If you priced S&P in terms of gold, it would be fairly similar to as it was 50 years ago.
So what do you make of...
Hold on. Before you go on to more market stuff, you got the interesting story with... You see that guy who created Telegram got arrested?
Yeah, what did... So what is that all about? I don't know what.
So do you know how he got arrested? How he got arrested? How they found him? This is pretty funny.
Actually, no, I read that.
He got arrested in France, right?
Right.
And he was hunting and doing some Azerbaijan like Formula One, and I don't know what he was doing.
What do you hunt in France, young ladies?
He was in France, yeah. And then he went to Azerbaijan, and then he was talking about.
Azerbaijan is in like Russia.
I mean, he was all over the place, right? So it's hard to find this guy, but his girlfriend was posting the whole time, and she
what an idiot!
And she was posting the exact same spots and like the cars and the shooting and everything that he was there. So you could see his, and then if you were following her, you'd see that she was in the same place doing the same thing, and so. They, I think, traced him to Four Seasons in Baku, Azerbaijan, and then they traced them to Uzbekistan, Kazakhstan, and then they used they got him at Baku Airport, and then I think they found him in or flagged him down or did whatever.
Let me get this straight. But like, I'm not. You know, I used to travel some, but it's been a while. You two dudes got to be my world travel here. How the hell do you go from one of those place to place without using your passport? Without, was he flying commercial?
Him?
Yeah.
No, dude's a billionaire.
Okay, so he's got his own jet, but can't you follow the tail number of the jet?
I'm not positive, but the people found him. Yeah, they found him that way.
So what exactly did he do?
He created Telegram.
Which is
a supposedly encrypted site that supposed criminals and people are doing business on, and he didn't give up his encryption.
Why should he?
Well, because the government told him to.
To them?
Yeah, that's what they do here. That's what they want.
Okay then. So, but he didn't do anything other than not telling other people.
Right.
What exactly is that charge?
Well, they weren't obeying the government's orders to give them certain information.
Other than that, Ms. Gestapo.
Well, I think that was it.
Wow. So who's running this stuff? Like Himmler?
Oh, jeez.
I mean, I don't get it. I don't.
Well, they've been pretty vocal about.
I heard there was a lot of child porn on there.
Finding,
so that's not good.
Finding Americans and who are sharing stuff that they don't like, and that was that whole thing last week where the EU wanted Elon to. I don't know. They were saying we can prosecute memes and stuff like that, and if it's offensive, they told him effectively to F off, but. They said, you know, even if you're in the U.S., we might come arrest you or request that you're shipped here so we can question you.
I'm just not being a dude that's in this on this level of whatever these people are. If you have a private jet, how the hell do I just fly to Russia, for God's sake? Well, why would they let me land?
I don't know. Don't...
By the way, what do you hunt in Azerbaijan? You got some rare breed of pig or what?
The video that I saw was them doing like target practice and stuff, but it was.
Yeah. If I wanted to go there, do you have like buddies in Azerbaijan I go party with or what?
Let's go. Let's go find out.
I have a feeling we'd end up with our necks slit.
Why do you say that?
Well, where
racist?
The hell no, I'm just saying. It never heard of it as a tourist mecca. So I land on my private jet. I walk off there with all my. Of course, he's got jewels and money and fancy shoes and everything. Why would they want to see me there if I had all that? Unless I was going to spend some money, I suppose.
Suitcases full of cash?
Yeah, I mean, it seems weird to me. Would you go to, like, Sudan for the weekend?
I don't know. Maybe if you're a billionaire, you get treated differently.
I suppose. You could get kidnapped for ransom.
That too. I
mean, anyway, so what did you make of the thing you sent out? The thing about explain exactly what you just said regarding the gold and the.
how many ounces of gold buys one S&P? So, you know, if the S&P, what's it this morning?
Well, 56.61.
Right, 56.61. And what's the gold price?
25.60.
So if you get, 2.2 ounces of gold for one S&P, somewhere around that, like that ratio is somewhere around where it was 50 years ago, meaning the dollar has depreciated a lot. But in terms of value, if you value, the physical to the stock, meaning the physical gold to the stock, it's somewhere in the same place.
Why don't you, as a
make any sense?
Yes, as a
I mean, it's probably boring for people.
You mentioned earlier in the show that when you do this to the currency, all you get is inflation. Why? And and I with my family yesterday, and they all have their jobs, and they all got their kids, and they got stuff to do all day. I mean, how would, other than bitching about inflation a little bit, what exactly can they or anyone do about a government that is bound and determined to leak the money up, to lend some people money at less than the inflation rate, and to totally change the what this country looks like in terms of rich and poor? I mean, it's been going on now for 20 some years, and I don't know how to
you do what everyone else does, do the best that you can.
When do people get pissed off and say enough? I mean, clearly there's no,
I don't know.
You sent that thing out about we'll talk about it with John when he comes on, but you sent out that essentially Cuomo rant.
Oh, that was a good one, huh?
Why don't you explain that a little bit?
And maybe we should post that on notes too.
Did you invite him?
I did invite him. They haven't gotten back to us yet. I think we should do it from the Stocks and Jocks official, though.
I do too.
Yeah, maybe on Twitter. But there was a good.
Did you use you could have used Lou Michaels or Jan Flanagan or Kevin, our more conservative guys. That if they invited him, maybe he definitely wouldn't show up. Just saying.
Yeah, that would have been pretty interesting to have those two debate. But coming from a pretty big liberal who was on CNN and who got tossed, I mean, he went over the influence of money on politics and comparing what they say to the incentives of who's giving them the money. So, I don't know, I could play a little bit of this for you.
Communities, and they fight. They take time from their jobs. They take time from their families. Republicans and Democrats alike, that's what they do. They need to charge these people up. They need to be able to get them on board. But there's another reality that is literally looking down on them. Greg, look at the ring of sweets, okay? This is not unique to Democrats. There is a game of money. When people talk about uniparty, we are strangled by the money reality in our politics. Those sweets start at 500 grand. You think there's like a teacher group up in there? You think it's like the Cub Scouts of Columbia County, South Carolina, that's up in those boxes? Some of them are lobbies and good things. The media boxes, you think they're free? Why do you think I'm on the floor? News Nation is not a broke company. Nextdoor is a massive organization. We are corporate media. We don't have one of those boxes because that's the game. You pay to play. Those boxes are filled with the same people that they say they're going to regulate. They are literally looking down on the faithful and being told, yeah, we're going to break down on them. We're going to make them pay their share. They paid 500, 700, $1 million, $1.5 million to have those seats. They get hotel suites that are probably gifted to the party. And the same thing is true with the Republican side. And they're going to take them down. They're going to change how it is. They are looking down from on high at the people who make the difference in their communities. And that is the reality of politics. And I had my producer walk around and show you those suites. Now, they're not all the same. They're not all the same. But the reality is, in 2000, they spent $300 million on presidential campaigns. 24 years later, you know what they're expected to spend? $10 billion. Do you know how much money Harris has raised in the last couple of weeks? Hundreds of millions. And that's success. A lot of it's small donor, a lot of it isn't. The most dangerous money in politics is now legal money because of Citizens United. You've got to know this. The idea that they can fight against it is almost laughable. It's almost laughable. So look and listen when you are told these things. Because I don't care what they promise you. Not here tonight, not at the RNC, not that Trump knows them, not that they don't own them. He did one of the biggest fundraisers I've ever heard of in my life out where I live. Millions of dollars a plate. That's the reality of politics.
And what we don't see in that, the graphic that they're displaying is, it says the penthouse suite costs around $500,000. The club level suite is $1 to $1.5 million. The lower level suite is $2.5 million, and you know the owner suites, the two lower level suites, kind of like the Wirtz Reinsdorf boxes, those kinds of boxes, $5 million.
You know who bought them?
For
Wirtz Reinsdorf?
For this convention? Yeah. No, I have no idea.
Then there's the big tents downstairs.
But yeah, that was an interesting video. News Nation is, yeah, they're not small, but they didn't have one.
Who exactly is News Nation?
I watch them on YouTube. They got 1.5 million subscribers. I think they got a ton of videos, but like, it's. It was interesting hearing him say that.
Well, that's what ends up happening. Is it? He could be, in some sense, not as accomplished. He could be the newer Elliot Spitzer. Nobody wanted him because he knew where the bones were buried. He knows where the bones are buried. His old man was governor, right?
His brother.
Brother?
Yeah, and then CNN tossed him out because I guess he helped his brother or something. What kind of expect that?
Yeah, well, yeah.
But I'm not sure what the disclosure or what, but you know,
it is. I mean, I listened to when I started about the.
Oh, it's Nexstar, NXST.
And they do what? That's the news outlet?
Nexstar Media, yeah. 67 million television households across the U.S.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, it's big. It's just not.
So if you have cable, you might be able to get these guys.
I think so.
Man, I've never heard of them, but. Well, whatever. It doesn't mean. It doesn't mean.
Oh, yeah, here it says major cable satellite streaming. And.
So they're with WGN, too. Nexstar.
Yeah. They own WGN?
Yeah, I believe so, yeah.
Really? Well, so. WGN doesn't do anything. I mean, they're about as milquetoast as they get. They just covered Chicago news, which isn't all that milquetoast.
Yeah, they hired a couple of like people who used to be on TV most recently. I think Dan Abrams. Remember that guy?
Yeah.
So, yeah, Dan Abrams and Cuomo and maybe one other. I'm blanking on.
Well, the thing that is allowed, when I listened to Paul, like I said on Friday, and I can't believe I was ready to reach the air-shifting bag. He must have given 10 reasons for the inflation. None of them were him over the last however many years. And he talked about supply chain and this and that and COVID and everything else. And I'm like, buddy, you're the one who increased the money supply the way it happened, and you're still doing it. When is somebody going to get on? And with all the media we have, when's somebody get on there and say that? We can't say. Is there no voice of any kind of facts in any of the news anymore?
Does it sell?
Probably not.
No, there's your answer.
But you would think, as just about everybody we know, is having some sort of a gag because of this inflation. That is, you know, they. There would be a little bit of an outrage here. Now, gas prices are down a little bit, but the Audrey and I went out Saturday, and we went out again. Well, went for breakfast because she had to go and do.
Think they're going to back everyone into a corner, and then do something again like outlaw gold, and just deflate everybody away. And because the government's got more debt than everybody, so the only way you can really do it is murder the currency, unless there's some kind of war or something.
Well, if people have that kind of money for a skybox or a convention,
but still, I mean, is it worth
it? They ought to be
it?
Able to pay some taxes.
Is it worth it? It seems like it is. If those skyboxes are $1 million, you know, you'd like to think a smart business person would be getting at least $2 million back out of the deal, or $3 million back.
I would say, how much you say the campaign is? $3 billion ish or something?
Ten. He said 10.
All right, I'll bet you there are 50 corporations that would be happy to pay the whole amount.
Right. Right.
I mean, what do you think?
On the line? I mean, if you get a certain regulation or something that goes your way, I'd imagine anybody who prefers cap gains or stuff like the, you know, loopholes, and you know, you want to protect those.
Yeah.
So
I mean, what do you suppose the thing that Lou was talking about, or was it Lou or Carl talking about the new push for more COVID vaccines?
It
comes under the Emergency Act. Now,
it's actually a two for one. A, you get to flex power and muscle and control, and then B, you get some money out of it too.
Well, the amount of money that the federal government, I'll dig it up here, but what do they spend a year?
In my mind, that's similar to something like a defense line item, where not only are you given cash, but you're given responsibility and power.
Well, yeah, you get to walk with the big kids. There's no question about that.
Yeah,
and we're not there.
Two for one.
So we're talking about the national the.
By the way, you see, Boeing said, or maybe NASA said it, that they're not going to bring that guy back on a Boeing.
They're going
to
wait.
They're going to wait for SpaceX to do their
6 months. I mean, I don't want to be gross. Do they have enough food? They got enough TP up there?
Lost in space.
They got enough poo bags?
They got whatever. They're fine.
You're sure?
And they can send up stuff too. It's the getting the people part.
How much of the government spending? I'm going to say total government spending is almost $7 trillion. Now, don't you think that a lot of that's going out to people, Social Security and so forth. A lot of it's going to Medicare, Medicaid. A lot of it's going to interest. But don't you think that there's other stuff that you'd be happy to...
That other stuff is about to get under some real pressure.
But the contracts people are getting, one contract is worth the $10 billion, for God's sake. What Pfizer's going to make on these COVID vaccines? Now, how did they become an emergency use? Is COVID an emergency right now, do you think?
Right now?
Yeah.
No.
So how do you suppose that came out in an emergency use thing?
Because they don't want to get sued.
Right. Well, how much do you think that's worth to them?
It's probably worth, you know, if the lawsuit's worth, you know, hundreds of billions of dollars, then it's worth some multiple of that.
I tell you what, I see all these younger people dying. And, I mean, and we'll have, you know, Carl do some work on this one of these days. He hasn't already done it. The amount of younger people that are dying in excess of what they're expected. And I'll get these numbers, or maybe Carl will get them for us. There's not a lot of it's stress, I think. Your life expectancy for males is turned down for the first time in ever, right?
No, there's a lot of variables in that.
Okay, there's a lot. What if excessive shots are one of them?
Everything's a variable. So
yeah.
if the combination of certain ones are definitely more influential than just individual ones. So, you know, who knows? It very well could be. But, I mean, that requires a lot of stats.
Yeah, well, it's just... So what are you thinking? Now, the White Sox, I'm actually going tomorrow night.
Nice.
Am I going to get to see their 102nd loss? What do you think it's like in that clubhouse?
I think show up, do your job, go home.
What's my job?
Not much enthusiasm, yeah. That's for sure.
Yeah, you can't. And you wonder who wants to be the interim manager. I guess you get some experience. But is he the Casey Stengel of this era or what?
I mean, Sizemore is pretty. He's respected by the players, so as long as he can communicate, which I'm not sure he can. But you've got a person who's respected, so why not?
What do you think of this pitcher who only pitches 4 innings?
It's just another variation
of what?
Possible advantage.
But what the guy in the Sox who's in the All-Star team, he only pitches 4 innings. I mean, because why don't you teach the guy how to pitch so he doesn't have to throw 100 miles an hour to everybody? What could his four innings every 5 days get you?
Well, it could be a lot. I don't know. Maybe that's his optimal. If you can get four innings out of someone who does that.
Well, if you're going to pitch four innings, you don't need 4 days rest.
How do you know?
Okay, I guess I need a year's rest between golf outings. But
no,
I mean,
the stress on 100, the stress on your arm for like 100 mile an hour pitch has got to be, it's got to be way more than an 80 mile an hour pitch.
But, okay, so get somebody, figure it's out get somebody like else at 80 miles an hour.
Right. I mean, it's. I'd imagine if you're throwing like that, it's more of like a closer type scenario.
Except those guys go every day.
Maybe an inning or two.
But still, they warm up on everything every day. I mean, it's a different it's a different deal. I mean, all I'm saying is the idea is the same thing happened to maybe before your time. Remember the show Moonlighting?
Who was in that?
Was in the guy was all messed up mentally. Now what the hell's his name? And was it Civil Shepherd? Man, figure out who was in Moonlighting. The guy's got real mental issues. He's got
Bruce Willis.
Yeah. They got to the point where they were fighting so much and how much they wanted per show. And I'm not sure if the show was half hour or an hour. Let's say it was an hour. They ended up like $1 million a show for each person or something. And finally, the head of whatever station was, you know, then they only want to do 25 shows instead of 40 like they used to do, like Bonanza and so forth.
This says they didn't like each other.
Yeah, they didn't like each other either. The guy who did the thing, because, yeah, it's highly rated, but it's all this crap for 25 hours. Because I can get six football games and I get 25 hours, and I got to put up with these two the whole year for 25 hours? So, I mean, you know, you got a pitcher, you're paying him that much. I guess
March 3rd to... Or what? March 3rd, 85 to May 14, 89.
Yeah.
Total of 67.
Total, they didn't even do the 100 you need to get on replay, right?
Right.
Anyway, let's go to break, and we'll bring back Mr. Champ Flanagan. SP Futures up 8, and NASDAQ Futures up 3. We're positive, but we're leaking a hair from where we were when we came in, but still positive. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas, and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you! Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at cognoshr.com. Cognos HR. Innovation in Human Resources. Licensed in Illinois.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howe. Greg Pappas in the studio, Matt Byrne on the board. I was going to mention, after Cuomo's rant, I watched an old Superman show yesterday. Truth, Justice, and the American Way. Does anyone know what that means anymore? Get a little of this. You know, Superman's motto was changed from truth. John, you're with us? Was changed from, it's no longer truth, justice, and the American way. It's truth, justice, and a better tomorrow. What the hell does that mean?
Truth, justice, and DEI.
Yeah. Anyway.
Can that be the show title?
Yeah, it'll give me something. S&P futures up 7.25. We had the Nasdaq futures has dipped here, though. They're down 4. Again, we had the big week last week. We've got the Dow futures up 48. Individual stocks, not seeing much of anything on the individual stocks. I got Salesforce up $1.20. Got Nike down 83 cents. That's about it. IBM down $1.63. That's a pretty big move. IBM's been up. IBM's one of the sneaky biggest winners this year, hasn't it, Greg? I mean, they were up on earnings. They just kept going.
AI.
Yeah, AI. They're AI. How come nobody mentions them with AI? And I think they're actually doing pretty well with AI. Anywho, we have over in Europe, we've got the DAX down 26, call that 0.1%. FTSE up 39.5%. CAC around up 16.2, so kind of mixed in Europe. But the up stocks have it looks like, so far. Over in Asia, Nikkei down 254, that's 0.7%. 38,110. Hang Seng up 186. Trying to get back to 18,000. 17,798. It's up 1%. Shanghai up $1. 28.55. Greg, is there any scuttlebutt as to why the Shanghai and Hang Seng are like not moving sometimes together? And really, Shanghai is just stuck here at 28.55. Is it just because of the debt issues or what? But how does that not transform into Hong Kong? Wait a minute, I'm done with this thing. You can explain that if you can. On Friday, Dow up 462 is another big day. S&P up 63, Nasdaq up 258. So all the way across the board, as Powell spoke at Jackson Hole, his kind of mealy-mouthed, God knows what speech that was. Everybody else thinks it was fantastic. I don't think it was all that. Anyway, oil up $2, but still 76.85. Still way locked in this 70s number. Brent up to 81.15. Natural gas down 5 cents, 196 under $2. That's with the La Nina, supposedly cold winter coming. Natural gas is still going down. Not so sure how that matches up. Gold up 1040, 2556, over 2500. I'm sorry, over 2550. Silver up 23 cents, 3005. The last time I went over 30, got smacked back like a bad kid, didn't it? Is it going to stay over at this time, Greg? Copper up 1 cent, 421. Foreign exchange, we're just talking about the dollar. 111.7 against the euro. And 131.8 against the pound. It's been, you know, you're right, Greg, it's been a lot higher, but that's the highest it's been recently. Japan is 144. We got Bitcoin down 246, but still way higher at 63,958. Yeah, Matt, what do you got for us, Trevi Weather Sports?
Yeah, good morning. Currently 6:39 a.m. on August 26, 2024. Current weather is 77 degrees this morning, high of 92. Mostly sunny with a bit of a humid temperature today. Excessive heat warning in effect at noon today. Tonight will be very warm with as low as 79 degrees. Down in Phoenix, 86 degrees right now. Mostly sunny skies today. Very hot with a high of 109 and a low of 82. The MLB yesterday, we saw the White Sox lose again to the Tigers, 4-9. Cubs lose to Marlins as well, 2-7. And in the NFL preseason, week 3, Bears beat Chiefs, 34-21, and Packers beat Ravens, 30-7. That's all I got, Chief. Back to you.
Do you have your Super Bowl tickets?
Yeah. For the Bears, for sure.
Yeah, well, you know. What did your buddy Wani's got him where, Greg?
50-yard line.
No, he's got one stat says they'll be 9 wins, 9-8, and should it's in Might make a wild card.
I thought you were talking about his tickets.
No. Why he's in the studio.
He's in the studio for...
He's got hired by Marquee.
Mm.
Unlucky them.
I like Wani. You know what he does for Yucks and Grins? He coaches my buddy Bill Murphy's granddaughter's flag football team.
Hmm.
Lives up
sounds in, about right for him.
Lives up. Oh, God, he's a good coach. He did great at Dallas. They won when he was there. An assistant coach. The Bears had nobody when he was here. And how is it every coach the Bears get sucks? It's always the coach that's the problem. It's never the front office. It's never the ownership.
No, it's definitely the ownership, but you can have a good coach and bad ownership.
When? Where? Name me a time. The guy.
Anybody in San Diego?
San Diego's always had decent ownership.
Not really.
Well, I'm saying there's more of a. The issue with the Bears has been ever since they got rid of the guy who was the general manager. Well, they got rid of Jim Finks just because he had too much power. And they couldn't wait to get rid of him because he had 3% of the team or something. Some weird stuff. Anyway, Mr. Flanagan, how are you?
I'm good, Tom. Good morning.
It's pretty good. It's kind of hot.
Yeah. Air conditioner got a workout yesterday.
Well, you know, talk about a story no one really cares about. The record we're chasing tomorrow at 97 is 1973. Now, you may not recall that, but I do, because there was a stretch of about 4 or 5 days, which I think were... Labor Day might have been actually the first that year or something, I'm not sure, but as a RA at our alma mater... Senior year, I was forced to go back to campus, meaning South Bend, like 3 or 4 days early for Uncle Tom Chambers to have his orientation for his RAs, right? It was like Boys Town, oh God. And of course, I managed to find a saloon every night, only because it was the only place with air conditioning. It was so freaking hot. And if you look back in Chicago weather annals, that Labor Day weekend was one of the hottest 4-day stretches we've ever had here. And we got down to like maybe 81 or 82 at night. And you remember our dorm. The window and the transom didn't cut it. It was so friggin' hot. Fortunately, I knew where the sheets were. I had to replace them every day. It was that hot. I mean, you could not, there was no place you could go except a saloon, which I found every night. It was brutal. And the day everybody had to come back to school, regular people. It cooled down, everything was fine. But the days before were not fine. I listened to that crap all day long, and then look at the section they gave me, you guys. Just saying.
I was blessedly off campus that year, Tom.
Yeah, well, your buddies. You would have fit right in, though. Anyway, it was hot, and it's hot now. What did you get down to last night? 80 or something only? 78?
Yeah, it was 82 when I... to bed, and it, you know, it had been dark for a while. So
what'd you think of that Cuomo rant? Interesting, huh?
Yeah, if he still has a job, you know, this week, which I guess he does, it shows there's been some other, you know, ideas about how to appeal to an audience, or how to create an audience, or look for, you know, a one that you've neglected before. So it's pretty interesting.
Well, someplace, somewhere. You're going to get a news media that just wants to tell the truth.
But only if they make money.
If they make money.
Right.
And when did this...
Well, I think they want some people to think they're telling the truth anyway.
Well, you know, I got the feeling, Jan, I mean, this is not, you know, Mayberry thing, but the dynamic was so different during the 60s, 70s, and even early 80s, where you had networks that were... very powerful, had these really good shows. They had shows that people had to watch because that's all it was on. But they had a lot of really good shows too. But you couldn't go anywhere else, you know, which is, you know, not the best. But I really felt, even looking back on it, that the news shows that the not that there wasn't some sort of influence, there's always influence when people are around. But when you gave the 6 to 6:30 hour off for news, you wanted it to be news. To us, I mean, granted, was it Walter Cronkite used to compete against who was it? What was the other station? Was it Harry Reasoner? No, it was who the hell was it?
It was NBC was David Brinkley, Chet Huntley.
Yeah, but I mean they competed. Sure, you wanted your biggest part of the network between 6 and 6:30, but it was more personality. It was more like real news. I mean, who people thought was better, right? But it wasn't. I mean, you didn't have for you to think that CNBC, for instance, all day long. Is business news. They got the ticker on the bottom, so yeah, that's news. But the rest of it is, you can't do news for 12 hours. Now it's all, who's your guest? Why are they coming on? What do you have to promise them? But I mean, you're not going to get somebody at, you know, in Jackson sitting there in front of Paul going, hey, Chairman, you forgot that part about the money supply going up 40% when you're talking about COVID crap. I mean, what is the matter with you? But it, I mean, I don't. There's got to be some news there someplace, you would think. I mean, and there isn't. There's no challenge to any of this stuff. Because it's, like Greg says, it's become all ratings. Does CNBC really think they're a news show? I mean, maybe they do. But are they really?
Well, what's happened, and I was thinking about this during the convention coverage, both the Republican and Democratic conventions. Remember when the networks were always touting gabble-to-gabble coverage of the conventions?
Yeah.
Which meant that, you know, they midday, you know, it was 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon, sometimes, you know, or around then, or sometimes earlier, I think, they would start their coverage, and they had their usual anchors or somebody who had been appointed, you know, for the stretch. And, of course, it wasn't always zeroing in on what was happening on the floor, but it was always sort of in the background, and all their other news, everything local stuff was suspended during the convention, and they did their best, you know. I remember in the 60s and 70s trying to make the thing interesting and newsworthy, even when the conventions were sometimes just grossly mismanaged or went way off schedule or you name it, and there wasn't any attempt this last time to give anything like gabble-to-gabble coverage. Was highly selective.
Jen, what is
even when they were covering it, it was very selective how they framed the interviews, who they chose, how they were conducted, what they wanted to talk about. So, I really think that, you know, that there isn't much news, at least the news that they want you to feel like is unscripted and has some spontaneity to it anymore. They can't trust that kind of news anymore at all. They got to tweak it, they got to suppress it, they have to enlarge it, they have to dramatize it. You know, it's all about making it more interesting than they think it really is, which is a bad, you know, culture for a news outlet.
Well, Chad, does C-SPAN do that, or are they just in Washington?
Well, I think they have other stuff, although, I mean, that initially they were just like cameras running. The house is in session. You know, here it is. You had to kind of figure it out.
Well, that's how Newt got so popular. He was giving speeches and nobody in the place.
Right. Okay, that exposed the whole, you know, joke about business was really conducted. So was that a good thing, or, you know, it was a necessary thing, but I don't know if it's a good thing or not.
Well, I remember, boy, to talk about a memory. I remember, you know, who did the was one of the big reporters at the convention in 1960, and you're right, they covered everything. The platform, they were interviewing people on the platform stuff for the first day or so and the whole bit. It was a big, and he actually did a terrific job with Jack Brickhouse.
Oh, I mean, he did it for WGN, right?
Yeah. Those guys are talented. I mean, they could do stuff, you know, not just in sports. I mean, they were good people. I mean, well, look how good what's his name was during the when the Israelis got killed in the Olympics, Jim McKay. He went from sports to the other stuff pretty easy. I don't think anybody had done a better job. Well, it was him, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I remember, too, that, you know, they would often have luminaries from the past, you know, even people from the World War II era, who they would truck out and put them in a booth, you know, with somebody who's a little younger, maybe a little more familiar to audiences. But it was about here are the old, you know, the names in, you know, CBS News. And, you know, this is after Edward R. Murrow's passing, but they had people like, who's a, I remember Roger Mudd one year, who was younger. And then somebody else, who, Robert Strauss or somebody, I can't remember, I can see his face, mustachioed guy. And these were like people you used to listen to on the radio, you know, before my time during the war. And they were, you know, a font of information about the way things used to be in the parties. And you would get a lot of historical perspective from the people who were covering it. And they weren't, you know, pushing, you know, any viewpoint or, you know, any interpretation, pretty much. It was just telling you how it used to be. And I was at the 1948 convention. And here's what, you know, there was all this, like, recollections and reflections on the process, which, you know, and they all did this. All the networks kind of wanted to shake up their programming and get people who were new and on the, you know, up and up, and also the ones who had kind of made their reputations for them, to come and speak on these momentous events. And I, you know, now it's just, I don't know who the people are doing the interviews most of the time, nor do I want to know. And the way they picked the people they interview and how they frame it is just laughable, really. So, but it used to be quite different. I'll say that.
Well, you think there's ever going to be another contested convention?
Well, I don't think either party would trust such a thing anymore. That was, you know, talked about, really, you know, in the days following the Biden-Trump debate, that this would be the opportunity for, you know, a wide-open convention. Boy, that went right in the tank pronto. I think they realized the way the party is configured now, they can't trust an open convention. There's just, there's too many passions, too many opposed viewpoints to turn this into a spectacle for, you know, a national TV audience.
Well, you know, it's interesting that Greg sent around that rant with Cuomo, because, you know, and me just, you know, being the dummy from the past, talking about my recollections of the 96 convention. And how some people had skyboxes, and how the, and had big tents, and if you were a big shot, like I wasn't, but the CBOE was a, you know, those people were, because they were clients of these people, and now we went from place to place, and you know, everything was, and then I, you know, I said on many occasions that the regular delegates were just regular people from Iowa or Nebraska, or hell they were, not the, that they're more regular than Illinois people, but the people in Illinois are somebody from downstate, and they're sitting there, and they're not in a suit. They're drinking a beer. You know, it's like they're watching a basketball game. I mean, you know, it's a, not quite the same, but it's somewhat the same. And you know, you say something about, you know, the votes from Iowa. Yes! You know, I mean, you know, that's what you do. You jump up and you're from Iowa, and you scream and yell, and you wave your flag. And it was definitely the haves and the have-nots. And I kind of thought, you know, it wasn't all that bad.
No, all the sudden, guy from Wisconsin was the worst. Did you see? He couldn't even read his own writing.
Oh God!
It was so funny.
Well, I mean, these are. I mean, how, John, I'm gonna jump you with this one. If a guy like, you know, Biden or somebody, or even the Republicans, if you're running from here, who gets to be a delegate? You can't be in office, right? I mean, who, how do you get your name on the delegate list?
Well, I mean, there were spots in the primary back in.
I know, but I'm saying, how do you get one of those spots? How if, you know, next time through you're running for president, you win the delegates, okay, but you don't just name the delegates. The delegates are on the ballot. These are the delegates for John Flanagan. How do you get to be one of those guys? Just give you some dough or what?
I think you got to give some dough. If you're for a, you know, slated candidate or the machine candidate, that's all been prearranged, just like being, you know, having a slot on any ballot in primary.
But I mean, you don't get paid or anything, do you?
No, well, not officially. It's not a compensated position. But even back in the 60s and 70s, Tom, the credential battles were the things that really, you know, fascinated people and really kind of took over the energy of the conventions. The Democratic one in 64, when, you know, in the height
of the Civil Rights battle. Are you about to take a shot at our executive producer, Matt Byrne, for not getting us press passes? Matt, how'd that go?
For Stocks and Jacks to get press passes to the DNC?
Yeah.
I kept knocking on their door, but they just weren't answering.
Well, you know what they say on the trading floor, you don't ask, you don't get.
I tried asking Kamala herself, but I couldn't. The line was busy. They say.
Well, I could have asked her. I got two calls from her, two texts from her the other day with two different phone numbers. Does she have a burn phone?
Oh yeah, probably.
Now you think if I texted her back, it'd go right to her?
Yeah, by that same merit, I was getting texts from Obama.
She's waiting with bated breath.
I have never given anybody from any party, Democrat, even though I used to be one of those, I never get any of these people my phone number. How do they find it?
Well, it's just any other robocall process. They don't know who you are. They don't know necessarily what your voting record is.
I never get one from the Republicans.
I get a ton.
I get spam email, all my email accounts, my cell phone number. I get them on my landline, but I think my landline is mostly research, or opinion seeking. I don't get many of those on my cell phone, but I was thinking this time it's all over the political spectrum. I don't think I leave much of a footprint with any of my devices.
I leave none.
But they are taking a stab at me no matter what. So.
Well, she's got. If I texted her back, who do you think it goes to?
Somebody not in this country.
Probably. I guess I'm miffed that I didn't get to go to this one. I would have liked to have gone just to take in the view. Maybe I could have been interviewed by Cuomo. Cuomo. Mm. Yes. How big do you think the parking tab's going to be from all the streets they closed for the city?
Oh, well, and now they're saying that downtown businesses, what restaurants are left downtown took a real hit this week. Last week during the convention,
Greg, you could speak to that.
Most of our people stayed home. They didn't want anything to do with the.
What do you think your volume was last week? Half.
Less than
half.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I've heard, Greg.
Friday was okay because a lot of the county people, the city people,
they were working remotely,
right?
Or they were needed, somewhere else in the machinery than the jobs they usually have answering the phone at the county offices. So I think the Daily Center was pretty empty, and all these places had other spots designated for their employees. So I don't think a lot of work got done. And there weren't a lot of people around to do it or to eat lunch or anything else, ride the trains. I think it was kind of a disaster financially that whole week.
Is the mayor still running around telling everybody how good it was for the rest of the city?
We stopped talking about 1968.
Well, I mean, it was handled.
It's a real high bar.
Yeah.
let's avoid beating the crap out of our own citizens. That's the bar.
Yeah, what a long, strange trip it's been.
I still can't believe the story that one of my friends, he's older than us, he was in the National Guard, he got called up, and he's there, and they start pushing back the demonstrators, and the person he's pushing was his wife.
Whoops.
And she flipped him off. That marriage didn't last real long. Just saying. But she was on the other side.
I would have been in favor of water cannons.
God. Well, the weird part, all they had to do was let them stay in a park. There was a curfew in a park at 11 o'clock. People had nowhere else to go. So Daly says, you got to move them out of the park. To where? Anyway, it was kind of a bleep storm. Plus, the convention was at the amphitheater. Most people, that was at 43rd and Hall, so there was nobody there. Did anybody ever demonstrate there, Jen? It's a long walk.
Oh, yeah, they had, they had marches on the amphitheater. Now, and the reason they had it there was because McCormick Place had the fire in 67. That had been, the spot they were going to. I think that would have been the first convention held at McCormick Place. And McCormick Place was unusable by the time the convention came around. And, the amphitheater had been the site of other conventions in the past, but they weren't planning to use it at that time. And that was kind of the last gasp of the amphitheater.
Yeah, the amphitheater, and they had him in the Chicago Coliseum before. Isn't that where Roosevelt got nominated?
No, he was at the stadium.
Who was at the Coliseum?
Oh, they had, I've got this very interesting book, Tom. It's called Chicago Wigwam. That's by a guy named Saul Potter, and his co-author was Ed Burke, our late city council member. But it's a...
Well, he's still alive, he's just in jail.
Well, this is where, Burke really... shown in a way, because it was in his historian mode. When he was historian of the city council, he was digging around, always finding interesting stuff to commemorate or to dust off and talk about. But this book is a review of all of the political conventions Chicago hosted with, you know, more depth than I ever really realized, you know, or stuff I took for granted that I didn't know about as far as the venues, the politics ahead of time. And it starts with the 1860 convention when, well, Lincoln was nominated for the Republicans at the first convention Chicago hosted. And it goes through...
Why would you ever... In 1860, why would you ever have... I'm trying to think back. How big was Chicago? Do we even have... The canal hadn't even opened yet.
Well, the canal was open. It had been open for a while by then, but... and there were rail connections, of course, and part of it was...
There couldn't have been very many.
Well, just enough. I mean, it was considered, you know, this is, now we're really kind of going off the reservation,
yeah,
for the convention. This is the limit almost. But, you know, this book is very valuable, I think, just because it's a document of how, you know, why Chicago, you know, was the choice that particular year. And there's several years, you know, where both parties were here within weeks of each other. That was the case in 1932. The Republicans were here, and then, you know, the Democrats moved in a couple weeks later in July. They had their convention in the same venue. And this had been happening on and off for a long time. And the book goes up to 1996, and it hadn't been, you know, the 1996 convention hadn't taken place when this book came out. But I kept, you know, just completely distracted reading it last week. Is you could dive in anywhere and find out a lot of interesting stuff. And it, you know, tells you how many ballots there were for the candidate that was chosen there. And who, you know, who were the people who were, you know, supposed to, you know, be the candidate, who got, you know, dinged or had to leave in disgrace. And, you know, the number of people who attended. It's a very, very useful book. So
you're right, the I&M Canal Trail opened in 1848.
Yeah.
But the Chicago's population is only 109,000. How the hell did you ever have a convention here and not like New York or Washington or Philly or someplace?
Well, and, you know, where they've been held before that, typically they were, you know, Philadelphia, Baltimore, you know, the big cities on the East Coast. And then, you know, there was a convention in Cincinnati. I forget which year. It was after the Chicago one. Cleveland may have had one or two. I don't know if Indianapolis ever had one.
Well, that's interesting. What? So now going forward here, are we gonna, based on what the Fed chairman said last week, are we gonna get any sort of I'm gonna say, are any of the issues that we care about going to be discussed in this campaign?
Probably not. What would they be, and how would they be discussed, Tom? Let's think about that.
Hold on before you guys move on. Board of Trade in 1848.
Same year as the canal.
Yeah. And the...
There's a connection there, I think.
Yeah, and what's his name? Cyrus McCormick into Chicago as a manufacturer.
And we had the... we already had the telegraph, so they were able to get stuff to the other places, right? I mean, I'm going to say, I don't know what level I could do some research on this, Jan, because I have all of it at home. I'm going to say 1860. There were some railroads. I mean, I would bet the Pennsylvania was already here into Chicago. The Chicago to Galena was probably here. The IC,
New York to Chicago was 1850s.
Yeah, and the Lincoln did. I won't say most of it. He did a lot of the work for the IC. So the IC was probably already open in New Orleans.
IC, Illinois Central.
Yeah.
Yeah, because Stephen A. Douglas had been the, you know, and he died during the Civil War, but the railroad had already really been pretty much established by then. So, yeah, they had connections to New Orleans and places in between.
I was actually listening to a couple of young people the other night, and we're talking about the Rock Island. Going, why would anybody name a railroad after Rock Island? I'm like, and I was about to go into the history of it, and I said, nah. But the Lincoln famously, the first bridge across the Mississippi River was the Rock Island, right, John?
Yeah. And the federal arsenal was there.
So get a load of this, Greg. So some steamboat guy, the steamboat people were all pissed off at the bridge, right? You can only imagine that, because otherwise the only way you get across the river was by using a steamboat. So some guy runs into the bridge and wrecks the bridge. And then there's this big court case.
He Baltimore'd it?
Yeah, he Baltimore'd it, basically. So he wrecks the bridge, and everybody, you know, they must have put a new one up or something. But a bridge across the Mississippi in though that era was quite an undertaking. I mean, it still is. And somebody, Nixon is...
Supposedly Nixon. That place is working now?
No, the channel's open. There's no bridge.
Yeah, the channel's open. That's pretty impressive.
Well, they took 2 months to pull all the crap out of there, basically. And then once they got the bridge off the ship righted itself, and they tugged it over to shore, to a dock.
Good for them.
I was expecting less.
I was expecting a more time.
But it had never been breached underwater. Uh-huh. It was just by the bridge sitting on it, it hit the bottom. It was sitting on the bottom.
Whoops.
So once they got enough of the bridge off, and some of the cargo stuff, it righted itself, and they tugged it over. And I mean, I'm sure it's probably not running yet, but I think there's a dry dock there that could hold that thing anywhere near there. Probably is.
Maybe some of the defense contractors. Like,
maybe.
Yeah.
So get a load of this, Jen. Evidently, one of the Lincoln is representing the Rock Island as to whose fault it was. You know, the fact that the bridge was in part of the river and blah, blah, blah. And so they get the captain of the steamboat on there, and Lincoln's first question to the guy, did the bridge move to hit you, or did you hit the bridge? How's that for a simple...
That's a very Lincoln-esque question.
Yeah, very Lincoln-esque. And the guy goes, no, it didn't move to hit me. And he goes, I rest my case, or something along those lines. I mean, the guy had a simple knowledge about it to him. Did you ever read his story about when he got chased and tried to fight the bear? And they said, well, what did you think of after that? And he goes, don't go fighting any bears. It was a really bad idea. The guy had a common sense. Did you? Oh God! Well, we're going way off the reservation here. But did you ever read any of the accounts of his autopsy?
Oh. What are you reading?
Lincoln's autopsy?
Yeah, well, it turns out, even though he was 6'4", maybe 190 pounds, maybe. He said he was one of the strongest men around. When he worked for the railroad, he did the work of three guys. He could take a big double-edged, one of those big double-edged axes, and just hold it straight out. Said he was amazing. He wrestled. He only lost one wrestling match in his entire life.
Wow.
And the dude, they said he had this narrow chest, but his arms were like a gorilla. How do you even have a skeleton, a physique like that?
Well, I've read, and this, I don't know if this is confirmed. I mean, we can't really confirm too much because it's over 100 years ago. But some people think that he had Marfan syndrome.
Marfan syndrome, yes.
Which would have given him that narrow chest and those wide
arms.
Very
elongated neck and, you know, feet, hands. Very, very, like, strange-looking.
Yeah.
The people around him. And I think there was DNA testing done by some Lincoln descendant. You know, his one son, the oldest one, did have married and had children, but I don't think there's any surviving heirs now. Mm. But there was evidence of Marfan syndrome, anecdotally, I think.
Huh.
Well, does that make you that strong?
Well, it was the whole, you know, the distortion of proportions, which, you know, it maybe had some kind of clumsiness attached to it, too, but it also, I think... gave him, you know, the rail splitter image, because he looked like somebody who could split a rail pretty easily. You know, and he had, you know, the upper body, I think, strength, and that there was an unusual...
How do you have that kind of strength if you're only 190 pounds?
Well, I think it's the way it's distributed. You know,
yeah.
He had the political cartoonists are the ones that are really interesting, because the way they show him is this very, like, grotesque figure sometimes.
Yeah, with massive arms.
Yeah,
but instantly recognizable in the crowd. You can always spot Lincoln in any photograph, in a group photo or in his inauguration or anything else.
I don't think he would look too good on TV, just saying.
Oh, not at all telegenic, no.
But
a commanding presence. You know, then he put a stovepipe hat on top of him. Mm. Completes the picture.
Well, if you had a list, you and the three of yous, if you had a list that... issues that are impacting the U.S. right now. I mean, clearly it's not a revolutionary event, nor should it be. But this inflation's kicking up again, and the relentless drive. They have 3% of the country have all the money. Well, the only thing saving the rest of the people is you have a 401k or you have an IRA or something like that, and you've been in stocks the whole way. You're keeping pace some. And if you have a real lot of stocks, you're keeping pace a lot. And you've got the generational move where you never have to pay taxes on the capital gains on the stock you give to your kids. So the amount of money being transferred from one generation to the next, unencumbered by taxation, is something that is astronomical. So if you got some people have that going for them, you know, and more than just the 1% has that going for them. But you've got kind of wars going. You've got budget deficits that, I don't know, Greg, they're going to try and inflate their way out of this one, but it's too big to really inflate your way out of, I think, to a huge extent. They've got the automatic tax increases. Is that 2026 or next year, Jan? I mean, I think it's 2026 early, I think. Now, that's going to increase taxes on the corporations. I don't know, depending on who you get in Congress, if that taxation stuff is going to be extended. I imagine if Trump gets in, he will try and extend it, but he's going to have somewhat of a fight given the fact that the size of the deficit. That doesn't mean he won't be able to pull it off. The Democrats, I'm sure, will have no even attempt to try and extend it, maybe. We've got the war situation. We've got the medical situation. No matter how much more money they want to give to these hospitals and stuff, we're kind of out of it, right? I mean, it reaches a point where you just can't give them anymore. How do you think any of this stuff's going to be addressed? You know, we're talking about, you know, elections in November. Does anybody even care about what's going on in Congress? Somebody wins. They're not in there till January, so nothing happens then. What is the timing on all this? We're talking another, you know, $2 trillion in the hole before, excuse me, somebody even takes office. So, I mean, I don't see a whole lot of glimmer of a lot of hope here to you right off the get. And plus, we've got, who knows what the Middle East is going to look like. I say the next 6 months is pretty bizarre.
Well, let's assume we get rate cuts in September, which it seems like a certainty about now.
Yeah, we've already got them. The funds rate's down to 5.1. The Fed's a follower, not a leader. They're already there.
Well, what do you think the impact of that's going to be over the next couple?
Well,
months,
I'm saying then? it's already there. I mean, but the 30-year has actually gone up some, so your yield curve has flattened out a little bit, actually quite a bit, don't you think, Greg? It was 5.5 on the short term to 3.2 on the 10, and now the 10's 3.8, and the other one's going to be 5. Well, right now, I'll just Google, because we probably are going to the auction for people today. What do you think the 30-day rate is now, Greg? It's got to be down to 5.1. Do you think it's down to 5? Let me look. U.S. Treasury, just Google that, and you're good to go. And I'm going to say from Bloomberg, 1 month is down to 3 months is 5.13. A few months ago, we were getting 5.5. So we're going 5.13 in the 3 month, 4.88 in the 6 month, 12 month is 4.36, 2 year 3.91, 10 year 3.81. So it's still downward sloping, but it's not as bad as it was, or not as steep as it was. I won't say bad or not bad, but it's not as steep as it was. So for those guys to be hanging at 5.5 in the federal funds rate when the market's already down to 5.13, you know, is kind of an outlier anyway. So if they were to lower the interest rate down to 5.25, I think, John, they've already done it. The money supply has gone up 4 months in a row. They've already done it. They're just going to announce it in September. Why do most people don't understand that? It's already
the market has done it for them, is what you're saying.
They've done it by pouring money in, which makes the rates go down, right?
Well, the market could do that too. People could trying to be front running or
well, but I mean, what does the 30-year, what is the federal funds, and the 1 month and the 3 month rate all have together? There's a pool of money that the Fed manages in the short end. They really can't affect the long end by, except they're going out buying bonds and stuff. But in the short end, when every night first of all, let's go back to what is the federal funds rate. The federal funds rate is the rate at which banks loan money to each other every night to cover their reserves, whether they have them or they don't. If a big swinging bleep like Greg Pappas takes a $400 million check out of BMO Harris and runs it over to his other account at Citigroup, I guarantee you Harris is going to need a few bucks last night, and Citigroup's going to have some excess reserves to lend to Harris, correct?
Yeah.
That's the federal fund. So how much they pay for that is how much money's essentially in the pool. What the Fed does is pull money in and out of the pool to where they say the federal funds rate's going to go from 5.5 to 5.25. They're going to pull enough money out that that rate starts drifting towards 5.25. It'll never be five, well, never is a long time, but it'll never be exactly 5.25 like they said it. They manage the pool so that the one bank is charging the other. You call up and you say, hey, I need a little bit more or a little less tonight. I got more money, I got less than before. It's not like the discount rate where they flat out set it and it's what you have to pay. It's a managed number. You understand that, right, John?
Yeah.
And so what I'm saying is they've already, and Greg is saying, they've already manipulated the pool to where it's already below the 5.5 published rate, correct? So when they go to 5.25, they don't have to do anything other than announce it.
Well, they would have to defend it.
Well, but it's already there. It's 5.1.
If it happened, they would have to adjust as needed. So
why can't they just explain this to people?
People wouldn't listen even if they did. Doesn't matter.
I suppose that's true. What about those bears?
How will it be pitched time when they do announce it?
Now, if there was a delay to pull out cash from the system, then people would start to care. But right now, the banks can kind of do what they please.
Yeah.
And there's no effect. Maybe you have to, what is it, T plus whatever
on stock?
Yeah, on stock. It's
we're down to T plus one, aren't we?
So T plus one. So, you know, maybe if that was a little different or people started taking out more margin loans, then they might have to do a little bit more. But unless it directly affects, you know, customers.
Well, it does affect people, just not directly.
Maybe investment banks and larger customers, but normal people don't care because they're able to put money in, take money out, and the banks have it set up to where the rules are kind of in place. Nothing's affecting their day-to-day.
Well, then they're not paying anybody anyway.
The only reason payment for order flow came into focus and stuff like short interest and policy was because they couldn't short GameStop or they couldn't do certain trades throughout the day. Then they started caring.
Well, you always had a...
That's when policy came in. You would say, wait, they're doing what? They're getting ahead of us and everything?
Well, yeah, that's always a... But, John, what issues do you... I mean, the one I was hearing about last night is the abortion issues front and center. I know the vice president said there's no way that they're going to push through a national abortion ban, and should come onto his desk, Trump would veto it. It was the story last night. I don't know if you heard that. So that's...
Yeah, and that's, you know, that's the position I think, you know, Trump has tried to steer in this. It's just, let's keep it as a state's rights issue. This was behind the whole overturning of Roe v. Wade. And it got lost in the shuffle, of course, and immediately seized upon as, you know, an attempt to ban abortions in the most hysterical terms. And I don't think that's going to fly. I don't think those are not the way to frame the issue unless you really just want a hysterical response to it.
How many states have banned it? There's been some.
Well, they've restricted it, and then, you know, that's...
I think some have totally banned it, except for, like, life of the mother or something.
We're back where we were 50 years ago, Tom, you know, before Roe v. Wade, so...
Well, some of the states...
Like we just ended into the dark ages. We've gone back to where we used to be, and that's... That maybe is a better starting point than, you know, it should be available on demand everywhere, no matter what the people in that state or jurisdiction want, which I don't think was ever, the way you wanted the issue framed. But the most passionate, you know, proponents of it. You know, that was the only issue they had to run in the last week in the convention that I could see. What else was being talked about? Was it Ukraine? You know, was it the border? Was it abortion only? So that makes you wonder, if this is the only issue, what are you going to do about it other than make people get really angry about it and make the worst possible insinuations about what the other party's going to do? That to me is just a non-starter. I think people are kind of over this.
Some of the states are having on the ballot is going to be the states that have banned it totally. It's on the ballot to be unbanned. Like four of them. Arizona, was it Missouri? I was just listening yesterday. I'm kind of, has the view changed of the population? I mean, and I know talking about this, most of the people alive don't even remember this, but there were four newspapers in Chicago. If you went back and listened to a Walter Cronkite newscast or the other guys, the tone, the language, and the information is much higher than it is today. Do we think people have gotten dumber? I mean, you could, in every newspaper, maybe not every day, the Wall Street Journal and all the rest of them, you would find articles that were pretty damn detailed, and you better know something, or you couldn't understand what the hell they were saying. I don't see anything like that now. I mean, it seems like everything has been dumbed down. Why is that? Just sells better, or they think people are lazier, they don't want to hear what... I mean, what is that? I don't... Man, you can read even the Wall Street Journal, and there's not much stuff in there that you would learn something from. Once in a while...
There's been a loss of literacy, Tom, and literacy not just in language, you know, usage or formation of thoughts, but the sophistication of discussions. The emotions have taken over. Those are a lot easier to push when you get to a digitally driven information cycle, where it's all about videos and it's all about raising the voices and making people watch when there's not much content, but it certainly gets the emotions stirred up, and emotional appeal is always, it used to be the deal breaker if you could convince people rationally or intellectually of something, and the holdouts could be swayed by emotion. That was always, your last best attempt to win somebody over to your side. And now there isn't any attempt to do it rational, because nobody has the kind of stamina to sit down and read a well-thought-out essay on the subject or look at a graphic representation of anything on a table. Because there's no, unless you ramp it up in a way, and you can see this done too in videos where they have the most ridiculous graphics or line graphs to display information, and the only way you could get it to look that dramatic is by completely suppressing a lot of other data or tweaking it in a way that makes an emotional case right off the bat, because you can't expect anybody anymore with the kind of education that we pushed these people. They can't read. They can't sustain thinking over a long haul. They don't want to get their information that way. They don't know how to do it. It's not usable. So that's where we're at, and it is a dumbing down, and I think it's quite deliberate and it's had dramatic.
But why would somebody want that? I mean,
you can control people then, of course, much more easily by just haranguing them. If you really wanted people to think, you certainly wouldn't go about it the way that the
newsletters
do it. Now, they all read the same script, and nobody can get any variation on it whatsoever. There's no usefulness, or there's no money anymore in having people think for themselves.
I don't understand. I'm saying, you spit that out, and you're absolutely correct. Now, the question is, who thinks that, why would I ever want the people that are around to not be educated, to not be able to take care of themselves? Why is that something that we don't want? That's something that I've always wanted. Why would I want to pull into some town where nobody has a job and everybody's, one of the most educational things, and of course I can't find it now. Maybe Matt Byrne is good at this stuff. Somebody wrote for the Washington Post, it was probably before it got bought by, what's his name? Get bought by Bezos or the other guy?
Washington Post was Bezos.
Bezos. The guy who wrote the, it had to be, was it a week, Jen? It was the, anyway, that wasn't the title of it, but it had to do with the Horseshoe of Despair. Remember that article?
Oh, yeah.
And but I can't find it. If we ever found it, we'd send it out, we'd tweet it out to everybody, if, you know, with their permission, I guess. But started out in West Virginia, and basically horseshoe down through all those states across Mississippi, back up in Arkansas and Missouri. Talking about how messed up and how economically not doing well are those areas. And everybody in Chicago, when you talk about welfare, it's a black guy in Englewood getting the check that he doesn't deserve. Well, okay, maybe. You know, and I'm not saying that there aren't people here that ought to be working and they're getting checks, but the guy traced it basically in those areas, and they're pretty much all white. Started in West Virginia. What was the people in the they had the two mobile homes together, and they were getting five checks. And the one kid supposedly had autism, but they refused to let him go to the doctor to find out if they actually did, so they sent him a check for, and the mother got two checks, and then there were the two grandparents, and they never came out of the mobile home. Somebody must go to the store once a week or something, but it was like something out of, you know, Deliverance, for God's sake. And when you traced all the way south, and what was the county in Alabama where how many people were on Social Security disability? Some massive number of people. And the one doctor was declaring them all disabled. And one of the ladies he interviewed one lady, and she worked in a nursing home since she was, you know, 18 or something. Yanking people out of bed every day. It's not yanking them, but helping them get up. They didn't have any of those machines that help people pull out, so she's doing this all. So by the time she's 50, guess what? Her back is all screwed up, and she's disabled. And the guy interviewed her, and he said, are you disabled? She goes, well, I'm not really disabled. She goes, but I don't know any. There isn't anybody I know in this area that has a job where you sit down all day. She goes, if I had a job like that, I'd go back to work tomorrow. But there aren't any of those. I'm disabled for the job that I used to do. I cannot pull people out of bed all day long and do bedpans and all the other stuff. That's what I did. She goes, I like taking care of people, but I can't do that. So there's no sort of retraining or anything for any of these people. She goes, there's no reason for me to be home doing nothing, except there's no job that I can do given that I can't do that. She goes, in this county, there's no jobs like down here. I sit down and I manage people's money all day. I mean, I guess if I had a bad back, nobody'd care, right? I would probably. Or they'd probably care because people like me. But I'm saying, and then they moved over to Arkansas. If you don't read any of these details, John, you kind of have no idea of what actually is going on in every different area. There's problems like everywhere. And, you know, if you don't discuss them, you don't ever find a way to deal with them, I don't think. Just saying.
Well, you can't really have the kind of wealth transfer that's been taking place, you know, for decades now without, you know, taking a chance on dumbing everybody down to the point where they won't be able to fight back about it. They won't even know what's happening. And you tell them something else is happening, and all of a sudden they realize they're way behind the eight ball. And it's by making people stupid that you get them, you know, cornered, where, you know, they don't have options anymore. They're not in the middle class. There is no middle class anymore.
But how do you not make more money if you have a middle class and those guys can all go out and buy bass boats than if they can't?
You're thinking it like a middle class member or middle class wannabe person, and they're not calling the shots. And that there's no desire to get those people, you know, with money in their pockets, or to get, you know, a leg up in the job market, or to get a fairer shot at a college, affordable college education. It's the opposite. It's about starving them out and, you know, taking their leavings and giving them to the, you know, the small slice of people at the very top. And it's not just Americans in this group. Maybe it's not even primarily Americans in this group.
Well, Jim,
but they start all of the wealth from everybody below them, because there's a commitment to, you know, demonstrating those people aren't entitled to have wealth or to have a future.
I'll save this to after the break, because I think that a lot of it has to do with the real growth numbers. I'll lob this one out after the break, because hopefully Nancy will be here, and then you guys can talk some real estate.
I'm here.
All right, well, we got to go to a quick break here, Nancy. We won't go through the whole mess, because too much of a mess. S&P futures up 8, NASDAQ futures down 9. Not much going on, so I'll truncate it a little bit. How's that for a big word? We'll be right back, Stocks and Jocks. Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. I think most of you know that I'm also the Chief Investment Officer at PTI Securities and Futures. There we invest for and help a wide variety of clients, and you know what? No two are the same. Some have legacy stocks, some concentration issues, some maybe embedded tax issues. The others might need or want some portfolio protection. There could be estate issues or maybe new family members. The point is that we are all unique and the portfolios should match. However, the last several years have seen a relatively one-way market. It seemed that all we needed was to be all in. No protection, no fixed income, just be all in, no matter who you are or what your risk profile or age. Most management firms love that. Take this and like it, no matter who you are. Be careful with that. You are not everybody. I think most see the market view going forward as maybe different than the one looking back, so your portfolio should reflect that. Maybe it's just as simple as your life station has changed. Towards that end, we are accepting some new clients needing a more personal approach and are interested in negotiating the future and not with a portfolio designed for the past. Find me at 312-663-4310. That's 312-663-4310.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Individuals and businesses with tax problems, listen carefully. Do you feel like you're losing control of your finances? If you owe over $10,000 in back taxes or have unfiled tax returns, we can help you take back control. The IRS is the largest and most aggressive collection agency in the world, and they can seize your bank accounts, garnish your paycheck, close your business, and file criminal charges. Take control of your tax problem now by calling the experts at U.S. Tax Shield and take advantage of the Fresh Start program and new laws that allow us to negotiate a settlement for the lowest amount possible. Our Better Business Bureau A-rated team of tax attorneys and enrolled agents can stop collections and get you protected so you can take control of your financial future. Call now for a free case review and a low-price guaranteed quote to get you protected today. Call now, 800-388-4901. That's 800-388-4901. U.S. Tax Shield, 800-388-4901.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen. Matt Byrne on the board. S&P futures up 6. NASDAQ futures down 18. This is after a huge up day on Friday after Powell spoke. Let's just go real. Europe is a mixed bag. DAX down 18, FTSE up 39, CAC round up 17, so nothing crazy there. Probably a little more bullish than bearish. Over in Asia, Nikkei down 254, Hang Seng up 186, Shanghai unchanged. So again, kind of a mixed bag over there. Oil. Oil's up 216, but still only up to 76.99. So Brent up 210, 81.12. This is a shocker here. Natural gas, 197, down 5 cents. This is with all this potential Pacific and Atlantic, La Nina at the same time, which generally comes up with a cold winter, but that's not the way national gas is trading. Gold up 1390, 2560, as high as we've seen it, marching toward record highs. Silver up 33 cents, that's a big move, 3015. Interesting, if it stays over 30. We've got foreign exchange, the euro is 111.7, British pound 131.4. Greg says they're not huge highs, but we are creeping down on the dollar. Crypto down 5.11, 63,693. That was short, Matt. What do you got for us, Traffic Weather Sports?
Yeah, good morning. Currently 7:34 a.m. on August 26, 2024. Weather in Chicago, 79 degrees at O'Hare, high of 96. Hazy and humid today. An excessive heat warning is in effect starting at noon. Tonight, very warm with a low of 77 degrees. Down in Phoenix, 83 degrees right now. Mostly sunny skies. Hot with a high of 109. Low of 82. In the MLB yesterday, White Sox lost to Tigers 4-9, and Cubs lost as well to Marlins 2-7. In the NFL preseason is week 3, wrapped up yesterday. Bears beat Chiefs 34-21, and Packers beat Ravens 30-7. Good news in NFL, not so much in the MLB. Over to you, Chief.
The Nancy, welcome. We have Nance. I heard her before.
We do indeed. Let me get her up.
Somebody unmute thyself, as they would say.
Nance, you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
She's there, and we have Jan.
Nancy.
I'm going to lob this one out there, and I know my more right-wing associates and other people, not just them, don't look at this in terms of people doing it sort of on purpose, and I'm not debating that they are, whoever the theys are, but there's a difference totally in mentality, I'm going to say, and Jan, I think, you know, you're old enough to maybe recognize that maybe I'm making some sense here. If the economy's growing, I'm not talking about the BS now, the economy's growing a legitimate 3% a year, 2.5%, 3%. There's kind of room there for people that are a little more industrious. Somebody like Nancy, who does her mortgage stuff, might do something else on the side. Well, all of a sudden, one day she does a little better than everybody else. People look at it and say, okay, well, of course she deserves it. She worked a little harder than everybody else, or she took an extra course that nobody else took. And if somebody doesn't do much, he's still growing somewhat because he's getting raises, his place is doing better, and maybe he's becoming a little more efficient despite himself or herself. There's room in there for everybody to do better. There's no reason to hope that somebody's dumber so you can take advantage of them. There's all kinds of ramifications. I mean, you want to put, you know, Carl and I talked about it on Friday. I mean, the whole thing has been debunked about the Milton Friedmans of the world, that if you get business going in another country, not only do they not want to leave that country and come here, but they're going to start to grow. And, oh, by the way, you're going to get to show a whole bunch of Chevy pickup trucks down in Mexico. Once you scrub that positive feel or positive growth feel out of your mentality, you say, we're only growing by 1%, really not at all, if you think the inflation rate's higher. The only way I can get forward is from somebody else to move backward, because it's all going to net out to zero, because that's what we're doing as a group. That's a whole different mindset than when I think we were younger, and it's not because of us. Now the mindset is Mexico is always going to be screwed up. They're never going to grow. They're never going to become massive customers. They're never going to become a massive trade partner. What we got to do is put the China wall between us and them and keep them the hell out of here. That is, I'm not saying on today's mentality, where we are right now, that having a border more closed isn't the right short-term solution, but it's totally different than the mindset, I think, when we grew up, that everybody is going to be able to grow together. We want everybody education. We don't want everybody to be dumb. Now, all of a sudden, Jan, you're right, it seems to have turned. I think it has a lot to do with the lack of growth and the lack of leadership just about everywhere, not just in this country. Just saying.
Well, you can see it in demographics, and, you know, Carl was talking about this last week with the job numbers, and it's a thing that, you know, has bothered me for a long time, because our model right now seems to be the Soviet Union in its declining years, when the life expectancy rates were just plunging, and you know, this was after there had been, you know, a drop in living standards, you know, that it contributed to this demoralization, or the, you know, the lack of regard people have for their own health anymore. If they can't afford to live, then living doesn't look like that great a prospect. So you don't get a lot of people who are, you know, looking for staying in the game for the long haul. And this is where we're at now. And it's the most troubling part of, you know, how people have been frozen out of any kind of ability to advance themselves or their families' fortunes. And you can see that in the declining health of people and their shorter lives. So that this is, you know, it's the cause of more economic hardship. You know, when the breadwinners are, you know, losing their ability to win any bread, and you know, you got families that are struggling and people putting off the decision to have families at all. And this seems to be the way that the country is pushing, and the whole abortion debate is part of the same thing, which is what makes me really disbelieve in the whole, you know, trajectory of this discussion.
Nance, what are you thinking on this? I mean, you think we're all nuts?
No, I believe what John is saying is, you know, probably right on. I don't know if people really give it all that much thought. I think you guys are digging into an issue that people don't even really think about too much. I think a lot of people think it's just going along fine. They are making progress, but after listening to John, I would agree more what he is saying, that, you know, the they want the middle class gone so that lower income people take off the middle class, and then they'll just be rich and poor, and, you know, I guess that'll be it. I personally don't want to see the middle class, you know, kind of go by the wayside, for better, you know, lack of better terms. But I also I agree with a lot of what John said, you know, if you really sit and analyze it and think about it. But I don't think most people think in these terms. I think they get up and they just think like today's another day, and, you know, they don't give it any more thought than that. I don't think their ambitions are as strong as ours were when we grew up. I know when I was a little kid, I didn't know I was poor, but once I got out in the world, I kept saying to myself, I'm going to do better than this. I want to do better than this. I don't care what it takes, I'm going to do better than this.
Well, then, how do you get the thrust of the matter is, I mean, you're in the mortgage business and you've done other stuff. You've worked for banks and everything. Why would it ever be, and maybe I'm just not big enough. Well, I'm not, obviously. When would it ever be in my best interest to not hope that everybody would get a nice raise this year because they'll send some of that money to PTI for me to manage, or they'll go buy a house where you get to do the mortgage, or they'll hire John as an attorney? How big do you have to get, or how sour do you have to get to hope that, oh, I hope none of those people can afford a house so I can go buy them all and rent them and screw everybody? I mean, how do you ever, if you're in the boat business, how do you not want people to have enough money to come out and buy your bass boat, for God's sake? I mean, how big do you have to be to want other people to do worse? I mean, the mentality to me there is, how do I not want Mexico to succeed so all of a sudden we can sell a bazillion Chevys down there or something? I mean, I don't get it. I mean, how does that turn? Is it turn because there is no growth and the only way you can get something is because it's stealing from somebody else, or what?
I think it's about power and control. I think the people that are wishing this negativity that you're speaking to want the power to control the people. And you can't have that if you're, I guess, wishing everyone does well. I'm still at the hope that everyone will do well. Unfortunately, I don't know when we'll see that again, but right now you're not seeing it at all.
Well, I mean, in your business, I mean, you and Otto both told me that it's not as crazed here as it appears to be in some other parts of the country, but I don't live there. But the idea that big companies are buying up a bunch of homes are going to make people, lifelong lessors. Sorry, lessees. I haven't seen that. I mean, I don't want to have some crazed program where you jam everybody in a house, even if they don't even want to own it, or whether they're not even know what homeownership's all about. I don't think that's necessarily the solution. But the idea that nobody can afford one because these guys can borrow money at 2% or 3%, everybody else is paying 7%, and they're going to charge renters the equivalent of like 20%, that's not a solution anywhere. I mean, where do you come down on that? Are you seeing that here, or are you afraid of it, or what are you thinking there? It's all the same subject. Yeah. It's happened there.
I believe a couple things to be true. I believe that the generation now, I don't know what you call it, it's, you know, if it's X, B, C, D, who knows, that they really don't want the responsibility of homeownership. They feel that all they want to do is be renters. So I think that's part of what you're seeing. And then I don't agree with the announcement by Camilla that, you know, and I'm not saying for or against Camilla, I'm just saying I don't agree with giving $26,000 tax credit towards, first-time homebuyers so that everybody can own a home. I don't think all people should own homes. They don't want to own homes. This generation doesn't want to own homes. So why are you doing this? I mean, the more freebies we give away, the more incentives we give, it seems to me the worse the situation gets. If we could just stop pleasing people and making exceptions for this and that. And I'm not saying that you can't have them ever. I'm not saying that you can't, you know, we can't have fairness, but unfortunately, you know, this country ran for a lot of years with the way it was, and it just seems like we're just going too far one way or the other. So if you weave that into what you're saying, I just think it's all about political power.
Well, if you look at, and I don't want to go too far on this because I don't want to go too crazy when we've got you and John on here, but you look at her economic plan, and okay, it has to do with trying to find a way to help people get into homes, okay? And it's also trying to find a way to help people with, matter of fact, your name was being bandied about huge the other day when I went through this the first time, bandying about ways to deal with child care and things like that. To me, it's what they're doing is they, who knows, the Republicans are probably trying to do something too, but what they're doing is they're treating the symptoms of the problems that all of us talk about every day and every week on the show. The idea, and you're front and center on this, and that's when you said, now people that they're working, there's at least two incomes. What did you say last week, last time you ran? There's 2.3 incomes per house. Somebody somewhere has a second job or a part-time job or something. I mean, you're the person I quoted on that. And now, so what has happened? We had 35, 40 years ago, you had one breadwinner. Generally could keep the car, keep the house, keep the kids even in a private school. You know, you go to one down the block. You could do that for that amount of dough. Now all of a sudden, you can't really do that. Now the wife has to work. Okay, well, now if she has to work, somebody has to take care of the kids. And then we say, all right, but now you can't have somebody taking care of the kids that you don't, quote, have on a payroll and are paying Social Security. You can't pay them cash money. So now all of a sudden, these people, the people taking care of your kids, and I'm not saying that they don't deserve anything, they need $25 an hour and Social Security and everything. Now, all of a sudden, they're making as much as you are at work. Okay, and now we because of our monetary policy, the houses have gone up 10 times what the, well, I'm going to say 5 times as much as people's salaries in the last 25 years. So now people can't afford a house. So now you, from the president on down, or the president wannabe, you sit there and say, okay, I've created these problems. Now how do I fix them? Well, let's give somebody government money towards the child care. Okay, well, the child care is the one that you brought up in the first place, saying, you know, it can't just be the lady down the block. It's got to be. In other words, these are problems that the government has created through their economic policies, and now they realize the harm they're doing to people, and they're saying, we're going to try and fix them. I mean, to me, that's the total reaction here, whether it's right or wrong. Do I think that in a regular society right now anybody should get $25,000 towards a house? I'm going to say no, too, but I'm also talking about when we were younger. I didn't need $25,000. The houses were $180,000. Right? Well, now they're not. So that's what I'm talking about. It's kind of a creep. You and John are talking about the same thing, and so am I. We're just talking about different directions. I mean, what do you do now? Nancy, go first, please.
Well, yes, and I wanted to ask Nancy for a couple of days what she's seeing about any interest in consumers for 40-year mortgages as another example of this kind of creep. You know, you take that as a standard idea. Homes are unaffordable, so the only way we can make them somewhat affordable is by lengthening people's payment schedule and increasing the amount of debt they have, and, you know, delaying the time when they'll be mortgage free. And by the time they extend the 40-year mortgages, or maybe we're up to 50-year mortgages. Are you seeing any kind of interest in these at your level, Nancy?
The 40-year mortgage idea was batted around a lot 2007, 2008, and that's basically, kind of what they did in the Obama administration when they let you, if you were in trouble, you know, they added it onto the back of the mortgage. Well, that's basically what you're doing, is just adding another 10 years on these people to have these, you know, low payment rates. So I think the 40-year mortgage, probably that idea of the 40-year mortgage will probably come into play. Whether it'll be a fixed rate or not, I don't know. You know, in Europe, they have no fixed rate mortgages. I mean, they only have ARMs. So, U.S. was the one that came up with the idea that everyone should own a home, everyone should have a home. And it worked for years. It just so happens this generation really doesn't see any sense with it. They don't see any sense in driving a car. That's why you have the Ubering or, you know, the Lyft, the car ride share or whatever you call it. And so it's tough to say. I mean, will it become a thing? It has the possibility to definitely do that because it would help solve things. I'd rather see that than give a $25,000 or $26,000 incentive.
Nance, what would that? Because what are we talking in terms of numbers? I'm looking at the mortgage calculator. If my loan amount's $400,000, it's 7%, 30-year fixed. It's $2,679 a month. If I go to 20-year,
What's it on a 40-year?
Well, if I go to a 20-year, it's $3,000 a month. I'm only picking up $400 a month to go from 20 to 30. If I go from 30 to 40, I'm probably not even doing that. It's only a couple hundred a month, right?
I don't know. I've never really ran the numbers, Tom, but the last 10 years, I imagine, would float and not become payable until the last, when you were at the end of the 30, you'd be done, and then you'd have 10 years to pay off the balance or whatever that was.
Okay, so it'd be
I don't think they would amortize it over a straight 40. They'd have to do more than that. You know what I mean?
Well, the full interest. If you're going to put the full interest, well, that's easy enough to add. If it's be interest only, what's 7% times 40 is what? 28 grand a year, right? Let me do it on my calculator since it's early. So, I used to be able to do this all in my head. I probably still could if I really thought about it a second.
It's a little foggy up there this morning, John. Yeah. Maybe we should just take over.
God, well, you guys should just take over. But times 7% is 28 grand. I'm right. Divided by 12. So your interest is 2330. Right. So you're only paying $300 a month toward the principal anyway. So even if you knock it down to 150, it's all interest. What's the difference? Yeah. 30, 35, 40. I mean, you're not gaining anything, really.
There just seems the real irony to me that I agree with Nancy completely that a lot of people are off at the idea of wanting to own a home or thinking they'll ever be able to afford one. So how do you push the idea of a 40-year mortgage on people who have already kind of turned their backs on home ownership by making it now you're going to be saddled with something real until your retirement years, and maybe even, you know, in an optimistic frame of mind, you may never be able to sell this home in any way that will get you a return on your investment or get you even your equity back. I don't know where housing values will be in 40 years. I don't really want to think too much about that because that's pretty scary. But there is some kind of desperation in offering this as a kind of solution, because I think it just shows how big the problem is and how far away most people are going to be and their families are going to be from ever owning a home that they can truly afford.
I agree with what John is trying to say. I mean, when you look at the whole picture, the prosperity we had in the Flint years, I don't think we're ever going to see that again, at least in our lifetime. But if we could get back to that, where people were fixing up homes, and that's another thing. People are so thrilled to get rid of their mortgage, right? Remember the mortgage burning parties and stuff, but, you know, now the windows are shot, the roof is shot. I mean, somebody got a roof the other day and they told me it was $30,000. I'm like, what? What did you say?
Yeah.
Like, what? And the fixing and the maintaining of the home is getting to be absolutely the craziest thing I've ever seen. So we've got to address this somehow, because the wages don't match the pricing we're seeing.
Well, they
and
also
especially in the grocery store. I mean, it's out of control for just regular families. I don't know how they're doing it.
Well, Nancy, it's one of the other unpopular parts of having inflation. I keep coming back to this because, I mean, you know, I learned an awful lot about all the stuff that inflation does. And I mean, if you were to go back, the lady who used to be a contributor to Stocks and Jocks that died in the traffic accident this year, when I went to her brother's graduation from medical school, who's now retired. All these people, they're all Jewish, right? And they're all from New York. None of them own their place. They all just rented big apartments in New York every year. And so, I mean, when you look at the 30-year mortgage that you guys are talking about, and I'm saying it's, you know, whatever it is, it's $2,600 a month. The reason why, if you have an inflationary push, you and hubby or John and wife can basically lock in your rental payment for 30 years. Where it used to be in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, you could go rent a place for 30 years and not essentially get hosed. But if you'd have done that, and if you'd have bought a house, where are we, 1994 versus had a nice rental apartment, and you locked in your mortgage at 1994 versus renting a nice place, how much do you think that rent has exploded vis-a-vis your mortgage? It's got to have tripled since 94. Maybe not tripled. Two and a half, three. Well, I'm going to say it's probably tripled.
It tripled in a lot of cases, I think.
Yeah. So you can't, when you say, why the idea that people should be able to rent. The whole city of New York was rental, wasn't it, John, before they had co-ops? Yeah. I mean, but you didn't get screwed being a renter because inflation was a couple of percent. Everybody was comfortable with that. And you weren't a massive winner being an owner versus a renter. What causes that is an inflation.
You can have Fred and Ethel as your landlord.
Yeah. But you know what I'm saying? I mean, if you want to be a renter, you should be able to be a renter and over a 20-year period not get screwed. But you haven't been able to in the last 20 years.
Well, that's true. I mean, we have so many issues. But to get back to the original subject, which was, what kind of people are wishing badly on another? I don't think they're wishing badly on it. I think it's just power and control. And if you suppress the people underneath you, of course it's, you're surviving. You're who needs more trouble, right? To speak out about this or that or the next thing. You're in enough trouble. You just want to get through the days without, peace. Just peace. And we're going into an environment where it's getting more in, and it's not one industry anymore. It's just a whole slew of things.
Well, how much of it do you think, if any, is if Nancy owns a firm and you got people working there that you see every day and so forth, probably, you being the good lady that you are, wants to see them do well and move forward just like you.
Of course I do. I would never wish any harm on anyone. I mean, really, seriously.
But if you had a group that was, say, my old telephone company, and I forget the name of them.
Illinois Bell.
No, I'm talking about my cell company of a couple of years ago. Their big thing was when you called somebody, you found somebody here in the U.S. And all of a sudden, one day, everybody's over in India. And Carl's talked about, you're paying people here $25-$30 bucks an hour, maybe more. And, there's a nice office you're renting and all that kind of stuff. And all of a sudden, somebody says, I can get you a bunch of Jamokes in Philippines or India or someplace for $3 an hour, and that's what everybody else is doing. I mean, at some point, you almost can't be the right way here. I mean, you can't. I mean, a lot of that has to do with, it's easy to fire somebody you never met, right?
God, I know what you're saying. I absolutely get what you're saying 100%. I mean, I understand it, but it doesn't make it that that's really what you want to do. I think it's sad, but that is, they would just say that's progress, baby.
Well, yeah, I guess it's progress for somebody.
Yeah, I just think it's sad, but... I owned my own company at one time, and we treated the employees very well. I mean, seriously.
Oh, yeah.
And did the employees appreciate it? The younger ones, not really. Not really. When the company was closed, and I handed one guy his profit sharing check, and it was for $90,000. He just said, "Well," and this is a 32-year-old kid who'd been with me since he was 19, and he said, I'll spend this in less than a week.
Oh my God.
On what?
You know what, Tom? He did spend it less than a week. He bought his parents a garage, bought a new car, and a few other things, and it was gone. And
I thought maybe he was buying a...
No, I still talk to him to this day, and he said, God, I should have never done
that. Well, he might...
He used to tell me that this profit-sharing check thing wasn't worth anything. He wanted the money now. And it's just people... Some people just complain to complain. And they don't really realize what they have till they lose it. Now he gets it. But it doesn't make any difference. I mean, people do what they're going to do, but the original subject was, why would people wish harm? They wouldn't. It's just that when you want to control what people are doing, you want to, you know, have them think your way, you're going to promise them something, and, you know, they're going to, they may follow.
I don't, that's not the leadership that I want to be a part of.
No, no one does. No one does. I don't either. But, and I'm sure John doesn't. The average listener, no. I'm sure anyone in the middle class doesn't want that. But we're also not part of the upper echelon rich class either. So I don't know.
Well, what'd you think of the, we got a couple of minutes. What'd you think of the, actually, we don't really have that, but the Cuomo thing we sent you about all the people upstairs looking down on the schmoes in the bottom?
Oh, I don't know what to say about any of that, Tom. That was, oh. Well, what can you say?
Yeah, it's the. Now, John, what do you think? The skybox I was in 1996, I don't think those people paid $500,000 for that thing. Is this something new? I just thought they got it, you know, they paid not very much and they had a lot of good food up there. Okay, well, then
it's all about the food.
Why? The.
It's all about the food.
No, I'm pissed I wasn't invited. So, Nancy, after seeing all this and after that rant, would you want to be a delegate sitting down, like, just filling the seats like one of the mopes, or would you want to be in one of the skyboxes? We lose Nancy, we must have. Anyway, we're after 8 o'clock. S&P futures down 7. S&P futures up 7. NASDAQ futures down 25. So not much going on this morning after a big day last week. We're going to see how this all sorts out. John, thank you. Probably talk to you later in the week because Dan's not on Thursdays. He'll be traveling. Maybe I'll have you on with Wayne Madsen. That'll be interesting.
Oh, that'd be great.
That would be. We'll be back tomorrow. Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
That's all, folks.